Good morning.
Before we start the clock, let me just see how we're going to do the time.
The way we planned it, since we only had 10 minutes, is I was going to do the initial argument, and then Mr. Burstein would do the rebuttal. That way we don't just
And how long are you going to leave him?
So I'm going to try to leave more time than normal for the rebuttal. I'll try to sit down at about the 5 or 6 minute mark, and then let Mr. Burstein take the rest of the time in rebuttal.
Okay, so you're trying to give him at least 4 minutes?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Let me tell you how that's going to work. So I know when you're sitting there and he just goes into rapture and goes crazy, then you're thinking, like, he's taking all of my time. All right. If we're asking him questions, if we feel he's done in 6 minutes, I'll stop him. Okay. But if we have other questions, I'll make that on our nickel, and I promise you'll get 4 minutes. All right. So remove that stress. And if I feel that it requires any compensation for the appellee, then to answer the questions, I'll handle it that way. So I'll make sure that you get to say what you want to say and we get our questions answered. But that doesn't mean you get to talk forever.
I won't.
How's that? Okay.
That's
so give us your name and appearance for the record. Thank you.
My name is Ben Coleman. I represent appellant Artok Ovsepian. I'd like to jump into the guidelines issue. And the government's theory as to why the guidelines two-level increase applies has shifted somewhat throughout the course of the proceedings. But the way I understand their theory now is that the two-level increase was based on copies of driver's licenses that were put in the beneficiary's files. There's two main fundamental flaws with that theory. One is factual and one is legal. The factual problem is that a copy of a driver's license is not an authentication feature. Where you know, the government mentions holograms. Well, a copy of a driver's license doesn't have a hologram. The only thing that a copy of a driver's license manifests is the embedded means of identification, meaning the person's name.
Well, what I understand the court did was, okay, explained that it applied the two level for use of an authentication feature to conceal the fraud. And that's distinct from appellate separate conduct that is involved in the use of means of identification to implement the fraud. If the underlying conduct is distinct, why is there a concern about double counting for conduct related to using a means of identification?
Okay. The distinct conduct basis does not apply based on this court's decision in the United States versus Aquino, which addressed a similar guideline provision. And what that case basically says is that these types of commentary to the guidelines would say don't do this twice, that you can't get around it by saying, for example, that was a gun case, that, well, in that case, it was a 924C consecutive. That was based on one gun, and then the two-level increase was based on a different gun. This court said, no, you can't do that. You just don't apply the increase. It doesn't matter whether it's different conduct, different guns, different identifications. That doesn't get you around this particular commentary.
But so, it seems to me like in that case, the second gun or the additional guns were more closely tethered to the scope of relevant conduct or scheme. Here, the district court really focused on the complexity of the scheme and talked about the fact that consecutive sentence was really for the perpetration of this sophisticated scheme, which didn't need this additional conduct of preparing and maintaining patient files in order to make everything look legitimate. So he thought, from what I can discern from his comments, that it was qualitatively different. So does that take it outside of the Aquino analogy?
I don't think so, because the guideline itself says don't apply an increase even for relevant conduct, and concealing the fraud is relevant conduct. So it doesn't matter whether it's two separate types of conduct. And in fact, we cited an Eighth Circuit case, for example, where a judge used one, said the 1028A was for one piece of identification. That was a counterfeit driver's license, but then he used a two-level increase for a counterfeit credit card. That was the government's theory. And the Eighth Circuit said, no, you don't get to base it on different types of conduct or different types of identifications. The guideline is clear. Don't use this for any increase at all. They get the two-year consecutive. That accounts for this type of conduct. And we've got two Seventh Circuit cases, both Doss and Zhang, that we've cited, which are right on point, and they refute the government's position that a thing can't be both an authentication feature and a means of identification. I mean, their reliance on these copies of driver's licenses are simply means of identification.
What if we were to find that the driver's licenses are identification documents and not means of identification? Do you lose then?
No, we don't lose because, number one, you can't get the two-level bump for an identification document. The guideline itself does not. It would only apply to an authentication feature, not an identification document. But number two, the Seventh Circuit cases make clear that something can be both an identification document and a means of identification, both. And that's what a driver's license is. It's both a means of identification and an identification document. And the commentary says don't apply the two-level increase in that scenario.
So under your theory, if a defendant uses a means of identification at some point during the execution of an aggravated identity theft, wouldn't that immunize any use of an authentication feature from the two-level enhancement, no matter how attenuated its connection to the defendant's use of means of identification?
I don't think so. I mean, I think that there are, you know, potentially examples where they could still get the two-level increase, and the government has mentioned holograms, for example. I mean, we don't have a hologram situation here because we're just dealing with a copy. But potentially in some other case, perhaps if some hologram is being used, the government might be able to say, well, look, that's really the use of an authentication feature that's distinct from a means of identification. But we don't have that situation here. We have copies of driver's license. So it's the same thing. A copy of the driver's license, all that is the embedded means of identification, the name, the birth date, the driver's license number.
Okay. Do you either of you have any questions? All right, so we've got 4 minutes left for your comment.
Thank you. I did my job.
May it please the Court, Benjamin Barron for the United States. I agree with the points made by Your Honor, Judges Callahan and Wynn, that the conduct was attenuated and that alone supports the enhancement. But I would note that there actually isn't even...
I don't know if I made those points.
Well, that would be a point I would make then. But I would note also that the enhancement separately is also appropriate because it was for authentication features. An authentication feature is not the same thing as a means of identification.
Can I have you break that down?
Yes.
In response to the point that the conduct is attenuated, and we discussed with counsel whether this falls within the scope of relevant conduct, his response to that point is that this falls within the scope of relevant conduct, and so the application note is very clear that you don't double count if conduct falls within the scope of relevant conduct. So what is your counter response to that?
I have two responses. The first is you don't double count for means of identification that falls within relevant conduct. So I suppose, arguably, if the district court had said, well, there are also names and insurance numbers in the patient files, then there might be an argument. But that's not what the district court did here. It did it based on the identification documents and the authentication features. I would also
All right, so that's the second point, really. I see it as two distinct arguments. Mm-hmm. One is that, well, I'm not double counting because this really is so attenuated from the core scheme.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so therefore, it's not impermissible double counting. There's a certain logic to that. Mm-hmm. But if the application note says, look at the scope of relevant conduct broadly, the effort to conceal is a part of the scheme. So if you look at it that way, then I think it shores up the argument that it's double counting. The second argument, and I see it as analytically distinct, is whether this authentication feature is really the same as a means of identification. So why don't you address that?
Yes, Your Honor. There are three lines of cases that I believe each independently demonstrate that 2B1.602 is narrow in the sense that it only applies to enhancements specifically for the possession, use, or transfer of a means of identification. So, for example, if you look at the Taylor decision out of the 11th Circuit, that decision held that producing a means of identification, in that case an access device, was not barred by the enhancement, obviously, even though you have to possess a means of identification to produce it. And if you look at page 671, it said, by producing unauthorized access devices, the conspirators furthered the criminal scheme and created more opportunities for the prohibited conduct to continue, which was precisely the reasoning of the district court here.
So what is the authentication feature that the government's relying on in this case?
The authentication feature would be those features on the driver's license in particular, but also the other identification cards. I'm not just relying on that. That would innate, that makes them appear.
For photocopies? What about counsel's point that photocopies don't count?
Well, first of all, the witness testimony established that the identity theft victims were tricked into providing the actual copies of their cards at the clinic and that the photocopies were made from those actual copies. So the evidence does establish that they actually possessed and used the actual identification documents themselves. In any event, I'm not aware of any authority that says that a photocopy of an authentication feature isn't an authentication feature. The purpose of photocopying them was to show them to the auditors to say, look, these people were really here, they were really legitimate patients, and the authentication features on the photocopy serve that purpose, just as in the other decisions I cited applying that enhancement, by making them look legitimate. That would be like the Baker and the Rodriguez decisions that held that providing a driver's license for mortgage fraud requires use of an authentication feature because it obviously the driver's licenses could only serve their nefarious purposes, one court said, if they look valid.
Is there a timing of when they do that relative to when they initially have the do this in response to something that's going on or someone that's looking at their files, or how does that come about?
So in order to conceal the scheme, the conspirators had to maintain the appearance of a legitimate clinic. And so for all the patients, quote-unquote, the recruited or the identity victims, they had to keep real patient files. That meant they had to keep what appeared to be real doctor's notes and also real copies of the identification documents, which, as was noted previously, wasn't necessary to the fraud, but was simply done as part of the concealment from the auditors, particularly to thwart reports by identity theft victims that their identities had been stolen, to make it look like they had been there, and then in some instances to follow it up and say that these were elderly victims who have dementia, but here are the documents that prove they were here. We have their driver's license, for example. I do want to follow up on two other lines of cases that show that 2B1.6 is narrow. In the prior opinion in this case, the defendants argued that the victim enhancement was precluded because the individuals were only victimized by use of the means of identification, so the two were intertwined. But this court rejected that argument. It held no. It was for the number of victims, not for the means of identification.
So under the government's theory, let's assume that there's a fraudulent scheme perpetrated solely by the use of a driver's license, so we're not going to mix it up with Medicare cards, Social Security cards, and so forth. So somebody can take a driver's license, present it, use a driver's license number and the name that's reflected on there. You could impose an enhancement, or you can essentially impose a consecutive sentence based on that, and then you can parse out the hologram on that very same identification document and impose an enhancement under 2B1.1 for that.
Yes. So would the enhancement apply in that circumstance? Is that what Your Honor's question?
Yes.
Well, I think that one important preface is obviously those are not the facts here, and the district court found that the identification documents, authentication features, were specifically used for an entirely separate aspect of the scheme. So that scenario really doesn't apply here. The court not need to address that issue. If the district court found that authentication features were specifically used by the offenders for the purpose of facilitating the scheme, then I suppose, yes, it would apply, or the district court certainly would have discretion to apply it. Gasker-Ruiz recognizes district court's extraordinary discretion to make those determinations, but that's not what happened here. And the district court was well within its discretion to apply the enhancement on the facts here. I want to know the third line of cases, just to get to that, which is the Melendrez, Dehaney, and Nolte decisions, the first two out of this circuit and the last out of the First Circuit. Melendrez held that a driver's license is not the same thing as a means of identification. Identification document, in that case, it addressed both Social Security cards and driver's licenses.
Melendrez, we noted that identification documents are distinct from means of identification.
Right.
And in our decision on Johnson's first appeal, we explained that driver's licenses qualify as identification documents, right? How can we reconcile those statements with 18 U.S.C. 1028D7, which defines means of identification to be, among other things, government-issued driver's license?
It actually refers to driver's license numbers, not driver's licenses. And if you look at the Melendez decision and the Nolte decision, explicitly noted the distinction that there's a difference between a driver's license number or a passport number or a Social Security number and the card itself, and they recognize that the two are not the same. In the Nolte distinction, at page 337, the First Circuit said, this distinction is not nonsensical, as Nolte claims, because fraudulently obtaining or using a U.S. passport may give rise to additional or different harms than misusing only a passport number. And again, that's exactly what occurred here. By misusing the authentication features, they gave rise to additional harms. They continued, allowed them to continue the scheme, and it wasn't necessary to execute the scheme itself. But that is why Zhang, the Seventh Circuit decision cited by the defense, is not good law in this case. Zhang is the only decision that I'm aware of that even arguably expanded 2B1.6 beyond its terms by holding that a passport is a means of identification because it's embedded with means of identification, namely a name or passport number. Well, Melendrez stands for exactly the opposite conclusion, and in, Dehaney extended that in a 2B1.6 context in this court. And in Nolte, the First Circuit explicitly rejected Zhang and adopted this court's holding in Melendrez, agreeing that there is a very important distinction between the identification document itself and the means of identification. And one of the reasoning in Nolte is also applicable here, which is that there are provisions in 1028 that use both the terms means of identification and identification documents and authentication features. So 1028b2 applies an enhanced sentence for certain offenses that involve the use of a means of identification, an authentication feature, and an identification document, for example. If you were to say that a means of identification and authentication feature are simply the same, then that provision is redundant. And Nolte recognized the same for other provisions in 1028. And, of course, this course is loath to find that Congress used redundant terms in its statutes.
So if we were to find that means of identification is synonymous with authentication feature, you would lose then, right? Here?
No. With terms of authentication features, yes. But even if Zhang is good law in this court, an authentication feature is not a name or a number. It's not embedded with a name or a number. A symbol of the state of California is just a symbol of the state of California. It's not an identification number or assurance number, for example. So there simply is no reason to say that, at least in some circumstances, I mean, it follows that at least in some circumstances, an authentication feature is not a means of identification. And for that reason alone, the district court did not abuse its discretion. Its decision was not illogical or implausible or without support in the record.
Counsel, we're kind of over time here. But
no, but if you have a question,
I have one question, since you don't get to get up here again. There is another argument here that one of the sentences was substantively unreasonable.
Yes, substantive unreasonableness, first of all, looks to all the 3553 factors, not simply any individual one. The district court amply explained why it believed that there was a distinction between the two defendants. That statement is supported by the record. The issue is not whether any judge here or defense counsel would have reached a different conclusion, but simply whether it was reasonable. And here, not only was the district court's specific statement of reasons reasonable, it's, second of all, overall assessment of the 3553 factors, given the scope of defendant's bad conduct, rendered the sentence reasonable, and the sentence was below guidelines. And as this court has recognized, it's a very rare case where even a within-guidelines sentence will be deemed unreasonable. So for all those reasons, I submit the district court's sentence was plainly reasonable.
Any additional questions by the panel? All right, thank you for your argument. All right, Mr. Bernstein, you have 4 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honors. On behalf of Dr. Johnson, I think that...
So I gave him four.
Thank you, Your Honor.
All right. I promised you that, so I've got to.
And I appreciate it very much, as does Dr. Johnson.
I raise kids, so they got to keep the promises.
Thank you, Your Honor. I understand that, too. I think we can say that this is perhaps unnecessarily complicated by the government's argument. If I can point the court to page 21 of its brief and simplify this, to quote, The enhancement was based on the fact that the defendant and his co-conspirators maintained copies of the driver's licenses of their purported patients in the bogus patient files to try to fool auditors into believing that the prescriptions were written to legitimate patients. That's the government's written statement as to why the enhancement was imposed. That enhancement contains two critical concessions. Either one renders the decision should be in our favor. So first, the fact that it's copies. We're talking about authentication features. In other words, something that authenticates the document as being legitimate. For example, a hologram. That's how you know it's not a fake ID that some college kid is using. It's got the hologram. Copies don't have holograms. You don't authenticate a copy. It's the copy of a driver's license. It doesn't have authentication features.
The law doesn't just talk about holograms. It talks about any kind of stylistic features that are somewhat unique. And even when you photocopy a hologram, you can see on the photocopy that something's there.
Perhaps, Your Honor, that's true, but it's not the authentication feature for the copy. But there's a second concession in there, even if the court disagrees with that point. There's a second concession in there, in that same sentence. The second concession is, it was used to try to fool the auditors. And this is getting back to what the district court actually said. And Judge Callahan, in the last case, you said, we're here, being the court, to review what's actually in front of us. And what is actually in front of us is the district court statement on at ER 170. The defendant and his co-conspirators possessed and used authentication features for purposes of concealment. We know, beyond any doubt, concealment is textbook relevant conduct. And as Judge Wynn has, I think, pointed out, there are these two separate analytical issues here. But we're looking at what the district court ruled. This is not, we're deciding, did the district court make a mistake, an honest mistake, in its legal analysis? District court says, I'm doing it based on concealment. Concealment is textbook 1B1.3, relevant conduct. For that reason alone, especially given the concession by the government that it was used to conceal it, and the district court's finding that it's concealment, this has to go back. Because it's textbook relevant conduct. That is what the application note says explicitly. And for that reason, it has to go back. For the copies, it has to go back. Because everything the government actually points to, names, numbers, also fall within the definition of means of identification. It has to go back. This court doesn't have to take this giant view of this case and decide forever and always, Are authentication features synonymous with means of identification? We're not asking the court to do that. Just simply what's before the court. ER 170, I'm applying this. I, district court, am applying this on the basis of concealment. Concealment is relevant conduct. Relevant conduct is no good under the application note. And for that reason, we would ask the court to vacate and remand. Thank you, Your Honors.
Perfect timing. Thank you both. This matter will stand submitted.